this issue of caveat emptor, or the principle of buyer beware, it's been in sharp focus this week, with the Banking Royal Commission turning its sights on small business lending, finishing that sector of the hearings yesterday. Some harrowing instances have been laid bare of people losing their family home when it's been used to back a small business that's ended up going bad. But the banks, and indeed the small business lobby itself, are resisting any further tightening on lending standards, saying it could stymie the sector, potentially putting a handbrake on innovation, growth and entrepreneurship. Could unintended consequences indeed flow from this effort to cleanse part of our financial system? So to discuss the implications, the broader implications, I'm joined now by Professor Rodney Maddock, who's the Professor of Finance at Monash University, and Gerard Brodie, who's CEO of the Consumer Action Law Centre. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First to you, Professor Maddock. I wonder if we could consider these sort of as two strands, the macro and the micro. And we've had the personal stories coming out, and then we've heard about what might be at stake in a bigger way for our, really for our nation and entrepreneurship and creativity. What struck you most? What are you taking away from these last few weeks' hearings?
Okay. I mean, the Bankwest case is particularly interesting, and many of the small businesses we've talked about have been related to Bankwest. The interesting thing
is
that
Bankwest took over, didn't it, in 2011?
The Commonwealth took over, yes. So, I mean, the key point is that Bankwest failed. And so probably what was going to happen was that all those people who had used security to actually to underwrite loans with the Commonwealth Bank would all have lost their businesses. But instead of that, what APRA and the Reserve Bank did was they had a quick auction over a weekend to say, well, can any other bank buy this business? And so CBA stepped in and bought it. But I mean, the alternative was that all these people would have lost their houses.
Anyway.
Everybody would have lost all their assets in order to pay back the depositors who actually you'd want to protect in that sort of event. So, I mean, that was sort of the status quo ante. The alternative hypothesis is that, CBA mightn't have bought it and might have said, well, it's just there are too many bad loans. We're just going to wash our hands. And Bankwest would have collapsed and a whole lot of depositors and other people would have lost their money. So, I mean, that somehow hasn't been in the conversation. And so over the weekend, without very much information, Commonwealth bought Bankwest at the time. And then all these conversations we've been having are around how you actually, in that circumstance, go through and try and figure out which are the good loans and which are the bad loans. And the bankers conceded that it made mistakes in doing some of that. But that was the issue. They bought something which was more or less a pig at a poke and then had to try and figure out what on earth you do to try and save the situation.
All right. Well, let's turn, as the great line, let's turn a crisis into an opportunity. Are there things that are emerging from the management of that crisis in terms of conduct that we can learn from?
I mean, I think everybody's learned a lot since that period. I mean, APRA is regulating the banks much more tightly than it did at the time. So we're probably never going to have another Bankwest situation. But just remember, I mean, no banks in Australia have failed really since the 1890s. So that's like 120 years, 130 years. So we have a pretty secure system. But APRA is regulating much more tightly. And the banks are all in the process of reviewing two things. I mean, one is their risk management, where they lend to these people in the first place. And the second one is their process for actually recovering money if they do make a loan to somebody who goes bankrupt.
Well, that's particularly, I might bring in Gerard Brodie now, because it's that particularly that decision-making about whether you lend in the first place, and then if things start to go bad, what you do to recover your money. Now, you're at the coalface at the Consumer Action Law Centre. What have you taken out of the last couple of weeks?
Well, one of the most difficult areas that were highlighted in the last couple of weeks is the issue of banks advancing money to small businesses on the basis that there is security, often a family home, whether that's the borrowers themselves or probably a greater risk area is that someone's provided a guarantee, often a family member in a position of trust. And we saw that really harrowing case study of Ms. Carolyn Flanagan, well, she was an older woman who had some memory issues. She had sight issues, and she had signed a guarantee over her personal home in favour of her child, who was establishing a small business that ultimately went bad and did not succeed, and her home. Proceedings were initiated to recover directly from her. It wasn't until legal aid lawyers stepped in that they were able to negotiate an outcome where she could stay in her home for life, but the bank still holds security in her home. And this is not an uncommon occurrence.
Isn't it?
That we see at all. We see many people contact community legal centres and legal aid officers who are at risk of losing their home because of a guarantee that perhaps they didn't fully understand the risks that they were signing up to at the point when the guarantee was taken out.
So what do you propose if someone, I gather that your suggestion is that when a home is put up as collateral, as opposed to say an investment property, there should be a different set of rules?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, well, guarantees, we see it happening, you know, people wanting to do the best for their children. These are relationships of love and trust, and they're wanting to help their children get ahead. And I must say, I recall an experienced financial counsellor saying that she wouldn't give a guarantee in favour of her children because she loved them too much. And I think what she was getting at there was the ultimate risk of the thing falling down, and then how would her children feel if they were in the position of having their mother lose their home? So I do think the rules have to be reconsidered when it comes to a residential home guaranteeing a loan for a small business. And we'd like to see the banks being required to take greater steps to ensure that the loan is appropriate.
What does that mean? What does that mean, greater steps? Because this is the core of it. You know, are we changing some vague thing from buyer beware to seller beware?
Yeah, I mean, it is a difficult area. So about 8 or 9 years ago, the law was changed in relation to consumer lending, and responsible lending laws were introduced. And they require banks and other lenders to inquire about a borrower's requirements and objectives with their loan, and to ensure that the repayments do not cause substantial hardship. About 5 years ago, in fact, the federal government considered extending those laws to small businesses, but pulled back at the time because of concerns from the small business sector. But I do think that when that there are guarantees over personal property, over homes, that is something that might be reasonable in the circumstances.
Okay. Rodney Maddock, from what you've been listening to, hearing at the Royal Commission, have you shifted your views about caveat emptor at all in terms of small business?
No, not at all. The cases we're talking about, and the example that Jared just been talking about, I mean, a family or an individual has actually saved like hell to pay off their mortgage. And then Jared's going to say, well, you've owned your house, but you're not allowed to borrow against it to invest in this small business because I or someone think that maybe it's a bad investment. I mean, wow. How on earth do people actually, I mean, that is a normal way in which people
accumulate wealth. That's what the old bank managers used to do, you know.
Well, they used to talk to them about it. That's right. I mean, there's still processes around it. I mean, there's not the conversation. I mean, the bank's not going to lend you money if they assume they're going to lose it.
Mm.
Yeah. So the bank obviously has to go through a process of trying to figure out, is this a worthwhile loan or not? So they're currently doing that. And clearly sometimes you get it wrong. I mean, a very large percentage of small businesses fail. But the issue is, should people be allowed to make that mistake? And obviously people want to make that mistake. And the model that's being suggested is, in fact, that you'd be told, well, no, you can't actually use your money to start a small business because we think it's not going to do very well.
And I guess that I would find that a little bit difficult, because what we have seen in some of the case studies before the Royal Commission is a real lack of sufficient checking by the bank about the business cases put forward for these businesses, sort of box ticking, if you like, approach, combined with sales incentives for small business lenders who have to meet targets to sell loans. And that means, and it drives, that the banks haven't done, I don't think, the appropriate checking to ensure that both the business is something that's, you know, sustainable or is likely to make a return. And they've simply relied on the existence of that security, the guarantee of the parent to advance the loan. And I think that's what's problematic.
I must say, James Thompson, writing in the Financial Review, was saying that actually, if you look at the ANZ, for instance, which of course is in the news elsewhere, the rate of individual provisions across its small business book, in other words, provisions for something going bad, is 0.6%. That is, of the $15.3 billion worth of small business loans on its book, just individual provisions totaled $95 million, which is really remarkably low. And he went on to say, sometimes when you look at the fundamentals, you wonder why they loan to it at all, because it's so hard to necessarily get it right, Rodney Maddock. That this is very this is nothing like your usual, what we talk about, loaning to people for residential mortgages.
Yeah, I mean, small business is a very, very problematic part of the economy. I mean, very large number of small businesses fail within the first 3 or 4 years. And it's virtually impossible.
I think it's 40%, actually.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's very, very difficult to predict who they will be. I don't know if there's been a lot of recent research around that issue. And we just don't know. I mean, the successful small businesses can come from any sector of the economy. So having somebody being able to sit there, a banker, sit there and say, oh, well, your business is going to fail, is sort of always very problematic. And so in order to avoid having to make that judgment, it's normal for banks to say, well, we can protect our loan to you, which is protect our depositors, by actually having security. And so security is very, very normal in order to actually make sure the banks have got a chance of getting the money back. And it's actually the depositors' money that they're using.
Okay, so yeah, that it's almost a trade-off that from the banks. We're not going to do the sort of full due diligence on whether your dreams can actually work. We'll take some coverage for ourselves, and you do. That's the classic caveat emptor. You do the work on working out whether you're really going to risk your money.
Well, it's virtually impossible to predict with a starting small business whether it's going to be a successful one or not. And given how hard it is to predict that, you don't lend on the basis of whether they're going to succeed or not. You lend because you've got security.
So, Gerard Brody, the plans at the moment, in fact, next week, I gather, the Australian Bankers Association and ASIC are going to be having really quite substantial conversations. Some say it'll be a real showdown over a new code of conduct and whether it'll be approved, because both parties have to agree with it. And this could be really turn on the definition of a small business. At the moment, I think the Financial Ombudsman Service can intervene for up to $2 million worth of loans. And the small business wants that up to $5 million worth of loans, which the banks are very cautious of. They say that'll make us more cautious and we might just pull out, you know, some people say there could be a credit crunch at risk. What's your view?
I think this issue of what the definition of a small business actually is a fraught one, and there are good arguments on both sides, I think. I mean, when it's getting to lending of $3 million plus, it is a larger enterprise in the main. And I think the primary concern of the Code of Banking Practice and the primary concern I have is for much smaller businesses that are not necessarily borrowing that much. It might be less than $100,000, a bit more, but the point is that they're being secured by that family home. One of the things that I guess we've observed over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years is, I guess, a shift of risk in the economy to individuals. So many people who 20 years ago were employed these days are expected to have their own ABN and be there are small business people in the areas of couriers, in transport, in lots of different small businesses. And as you mentioned, you know, many of these small businesses fail, 40%. We are part of the National Debt Helpline, which is a telephone line where people can speak to a financial counsellor over the phone if they're struggling in debt. And there are a greater proportion of people calling us, which are failed small businesses. And I think that, you know, that's the concern we're trying to pick up here.
And just quickly,
Geraldine, just let me come in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
it's actually ASIC that wants the $5 million. I should make that clear. Not small business. ASIC wants $5 million.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the point is that the number of small businesses in Australia, the number of startups, is actually declining, and has been for about the last 5 or 6 years. So the idea that this is becoming more and more common way of starting in life by starting a business is just wrong. There may be more complaints, which is what Jared's picking up on, but there's actually not more small businesses. That's a declining trend, not a growing trend. And so that's one of the things that, as a policymaker, you should be very concerned about. Why aren't we seeing the same rate of growth of new businesses in Australia as we did 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 years ago? So the trend is actually downwards, not upwards, in terms of small business growth.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, look, that's just a snapshot again. We're trying to do this about every couple of weeks, look at the Banking Royal Commission, because I think it's just there's just so many important things coming out of it. Rodney Maddock and Jared Brodie, thank you very much for joining us.
Lovely. Thanks.
Thanks, Geraldine. Bye.
Rodney Maddock is Professor of Finance at Monash University, and Jared Brodie, the Chief Executive Officer for the Consumer Action Law Centre.